Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
In addition to everything else that's going on, awards-wise, anniversary-wise, the Grammy Awards are tonight. For many of you, the Grammys have not been relevant since 1971. Now, why that is, that for some people, I mean, everyone's musical taste is different. I get that. I don't want to make it sound like it's a bad thing. But for a lot of people, your awareness of contemporary music stops at a certain time. You know, I don't know if it's like, you know, formative year of your youth, which you stop paying attention to new music, or milestones of your life, or I'm not sure exactly what it is. So for a lot of people, when they hear, you know, contemporary songs, new artists, it means nothing to them. You know, and in fact, people don't even like, you know, certain kinds of new music, and they're perfectly comfortable staying in their place where music stopped for them. That's fine. Everyone has their own musical taste. But the Grammy Awards are tonight. There are 32 performances that will take place on the Grammys tonight. Let me find my cheat notes on here. 32 performances that are going to take place on the Grammy Awards tonight. Taylor Swift was supposed to be there and perform, and she backed out at the last minute. She was last seen in Sundance. They unveiled a new documentary on her. But people who are close to Taylor Swift are saying she decided to back out of being at the show and performing on the show, even though she's nominated for 3 Grammy Awards tonight, because her mother is undergoing treatment for a brain tumor right now. Not 100% sure how serious this is. But you never want to hear brain tumor for anyone. So we send our best wishes and hopes for a positive outcome with that. But Taylor Swift has decided she would rather spend time with her mom tonight than be at another award show. But some of the other performers who will be part of the show tonight include John Legend, the Jonas Brothers, Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus, Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani, Tyler the Creator, Lizzo, Billie Eilish will perform tonight. Camila Cabello will perform tonight. They're going to do a special tribute to Prince on the show tonight. They're going to do a special tribute to the legendary trombone shorty that's going to be performed by Gary Clark Jr., The Roots, and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. That should be fantastic. There will be a special tribute to the musical and to the film Fame, which they will perform some of the signature songs from that show with Ben Platt, with Cyndi Lauper, with Lang Lang, Misty Copeland, Joshua Bell. Camila Cabello will be part of that as well. The group War will be part of that. So, some amazing performances. Some of the other names who will perform tonight include Brandi Carlile and Tanya Tucker together. Aerosmith will perform with Run DMC. That'll be fun. Kirk Franklin, DJ Khaled, John Legend, Meek Mill, and YG and Roddy Ricch will be paying tribute to the late Nipsey Hussle. There will be Demi Lovato. There'll be Bonnie Raitt, who'll be doing a tribute to John Prine. Who else? Charlie Wilson, Usher, Sheila E. Those are the pretty big names who will all be performing tonight on the Grammy Awards. It's a fantastic performance show. So, I'll be watching for sure. And then if you don't, I'll have the full recap of it all with the winners, losers, and the best performances all tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News. So let me run down some of the nominees for some of the major categories. Probably the two biggest categories are Album of the Year and Record of the Year. Let me focus in on Record of the Year first. Record of the Year is the award that's given to the total overall recording itself. Song of the Year is just songwriting, just the lyrics. Record of the Year is everything. It's the instrumentation, it's the producing, it's the songs, it's the performance, everything. Total umbrella. So let's start off with the nominees for Record of the Year, and they include the song that's called Bad Guy with Billie Eilish.
So you're a tough guy, like you really rough guy, just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Everybody is talking about Billie Eilish, 16 years old. And she is up for six different awards tonight. She ties with Lil Nas X with six nominations. Only Lizzo has more, a total of eight nominations in all. But let's keep going down the list here with Bon Iver and the song called Hey Ma.
Full time you talk your money up, but it's hitting you cold.
Sound, good sound. Bon Iver, that's called Hey Ma. One of my favorite new vocalists is a young lady who goes by the name of Her, H-E-R. Her nominated song for Record of the Year is called Hard Place. Voice, love the song, love the words of the song. It's maybe my personal pick. I don't think it's going to win Record of the Year, but it definitely is one of my favorite. Her is her name, and the song is Hard Place. Next, nominated for Record of the Year, Khalid and Talk.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about now?
Also good sound, Khalid. The song is called Talk. And one of the biggest songs of last year, it was the number one for something like 13 weeks, won all kinds of awards already for its performers. Old Town Road, Lil Nas X with Billy Ray Cyrus.
Baby's got a habit, diamond rings and Fendi sports bras. Riding down Rodeo in my Maserati sports car.
God knows stress, I've been through all.
Like hip hop meets country together there. All right. Now, the woman who has the most nominations of any performer this year is named Lizzo. If you watch Saturday Night Live, on which Eddie Murphy performed several weeks ago, you also saw Lizzo. This is Truth Hurts.
But you're holding me back.
Been top of the charts ever since it came out. She is one of the hottest artists out there right now. Her name is Lizzo. It's Truth Hurts. Next up, Post Malone and Swae Lee and the song Sunflower.
Oh, and you'll be left in the dust unless I stuck by you. You're the sunflower.
right. And finally, the final nominee for Record of the Year, somebody who backed out of performing on the Grammys last year, but has confirmed that she will not only be in attendance tonight, but also will be performing, is Ariana Grande, and she is nominated for Record of the Year for her song, Seven Rings.
But Mr. Tiffany's and bottles of bubbles, girls with tattoos who like getting in trouble, lashes and diamonds, ATM machines, buy myself all of my favorite things. Been through some bad, I should be a savage. Who would've thought it turned me to a savage? Rather be tied up with cause and not strings. Write my own checks like I might wanna sing.
Sound a little bit familiar to you? Yes, if you're a fan of The Sound of Music, certainly it will. The song goes on from there. It's probably heard the copying of the song My Favorite Things there is probably why it will not win Record of the Year. But it doesn't matter. She already has had this song at the top of the charts for weeks and weeks and weeks. And, for all that we read about Ariana Grande's personal life in the tabloids, you got to give it to Ariana Grande for her generosity with this song. She didn't need to do it, but she has decided to give 90% of all of the songwriting royalties to the estate of Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein II. The song uses My Favorite Things in it, which was written by Rodgers and Hammerstein in 1959. Rodgers and Hammerstein died in 1979 and 1960, respectively. But Ariana Grande's people thought that it would be a nice thing to do to give more than a substantial contribution for the use of the song, the My Favorite Things part of the song, to the estate. So that's a kind of a little interesting backstory on the whole thing. Those are your nominees for Record of the Year. We'll go over some of the other nominees coming up a little bit later on.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion.
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you fail, it will be a massacre.
We've got orders to cross here.
That is the German front line.
If we're not clever about this, no one will get to your brother.
That is basically the plot line for the movie that's called 1917. It was my personal number one movie for 2019. I loved it. I loved it for its very compelling story. I loved it for its performances. No big names starring in the movie. Colin Firth has a supporting role. Benedict Cumberbatch has a supporting role. But the main two stars are two young British actors and more than carry this story. The thing that is most amazing, I mean, it's the story of these two soldiers that have to get a message across enemy lines during World War I, across the German enemy line, that their fellow soldiers, two of whom happen to be related, are about to walk into a trap and will be massacred, to get that message across the lines to them. So it's a very compelling story, and one that really draws you in. And I think one of the reasons that it really draws you in like that is the way that this movie is shot. Director Sam Mendes shot the film to make it look like it's one continuous flowing shot without any cuts in it. It's so amazing, technically, to see the movie. So last night in Hollywood, Sam Mendes won what is considered to be the best predictor of what may happen at the Oscars. Sam Mendes won the Directors Guild of America Award for Best Direction for a feature film. It's a huge honor, and only 7 times since this award has been given out, starting in 1948, only 7 times since 1948, has the person who won the Directors Guild Award not go on to win Best Picture of the Year. So this clearly puts 1917 up front as the movie that's got the most momentum now. Academy voting is going to end in 2 days. So, I mean, this is just the timing for this is happening for 1917 as people are voting. Above the movie Parasite, which is also an amazing movie and, you know, has been winning lots of awards, but did not win last night. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's film, did not win last night. Martin Scorsese for The Irishman did not win last night. Taiki Waititi for the movie Jojo Rabbit was the other director who was nominated last night, but the winner was Sam Mendes, and I think so deservedly so. Before the movie came out, so it was like early December, I think. Right around the beginning of early December, Sam Mendes and his two actors were here in Chicago. And this was before the movie had come out, before any of the buzz, before any of the hype, before anything. It's just me completely blown away by the movie that I had just seen the night before. I was able to sit down and talk with Sam Mendes about this movie that now seems to be poised to take away plenty of the Oscar gold.
How did you decide to take on this subject matter in the first place? And I guess, you know, the biggest question this year is how did you decide to shoot it the way that you shot it, which is phenomenal?
Well, I'd always been fascinated in this war because my grandfather told me stories of it when I was a little boy. And he never talked about the war to his kids, and it wasn't until he was in his late 70s that he was ready to talk about it, and for some reason he chose to tell it to his grandchildren. And so it lodged in my memory. I didn't know then that I was going to, you know, make movies or anything like that, but and it always felt like his story. But one particular story always haunted me, and that was this story he told about carrying a message across no man's land. It was actually in the mist in the evening, and he painted a very wonderful picture of it, and it never left me, really. And then I thought, well, what if that man just carried on with his message way over no man's land, and the journey was more epic? And that was the basis for it. And then the idea of the one shot came kind of hand in hand with the idea of it being a 2 hours of real time, that there is this moment in the war when the Germans simply, they retreat to the Hindenburg line and they simply disappear. You know, overnight the enemy is gone and they don't know whether they retreated or withdrawn, and they're cut adrift in this land that they've been fighting over, which they've never seen. And it's a very varied land. It's a land of not just no man's land and the things you know from World War One movies probably, and history, which is trenches. It's also farmhouses and fields and canals and woods and orchards and rivers and burning towns at night. And so we constructed this epic journey. So the two things went hand in hand. I wanted the audience to feel part of the journey, fundamentally. I wanted them to, in a movie that resembles something more like a ticking clock thriller, to feel every second passing with the men, feel the clock winding down. I wanted to sense the distance they had to travel, feel the physical difficulty of the journey. And I just felt like an audience at a certain point will unconsciously or consciously begin to realize they can't get out of this journey. They have to go on it with the men. That whatever corner they're going to go around, they're going to have to go around it, you know, together.
Yeah.
And that was something I really wanted to, create that immediacy.
What were the physical challenges for you of shooting it this way, as if it were one continuous shot, as opposed to the way that conventionally shoot a film?
Physical challenges. I mean, the main difficulty for me on a day-to-day basis was that I was so far away from the actors by the time they got to the end of the shot, they couldn't hear me. Mm. And it was often, you know, you have to walk back half a mile to start the scene again. Mm. So it's a very, very long process. And it was also tricky because I had to measure every step of the journey before we built or made anything. So you can write, they travel, we built over a mile of trenches, but we had to walk the scenes down the trenches, marking with flags when they turn left, when they turn right, when they moved, what scenes happen where. And I had to do that for every single scene beyond that. through no man's land. You can write, they go through a quarry, down a hill, through an orchard to a farmhouse, but then you've got to measure the distances. You know, the scene in the orchard has to be the length of the dialogue, and the dialogue can't be longer than the orchard, and the orchard can't be longer than the dialogue. So you can't construct the orchard until you rehearse the scene.
The distance, but also the composition of each frame also has to match precisely.
Yeah.
Or at least have some sort of transition.
Yeah,
you're turning a corner or something.
Exactly.
Right?
It's a constant dance between camera, character, and landscape, all of which are moving all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to be intimate, sometimes you want to be epic, sometimes you want to be wide and sometimes tight, and you have to allow for that movement constantly. And then, you also have to find ways to hide the way that the shots are stitched together, or for an audience, not to hide it so much, just to not be thinking about it. You know, you don't want an audience thinking about how you shot it. You don't want them to be taken out of the movie. You want them to be aware that something's pulling them, that they can't stop. And I think that, you know, you become aware when you're used to cutting, as I am, used to governing rhythm in post, that you get lazy and you think, oh, I can just do that in post. I can just, you know. So it forces you to rethink and constantly analyze the relationship between camera and actor.
Yeah, it's beautiful. At the same time, it's such a big movie, you know, that's being compared to Saving Private Ryan. I wonder if you're comfortable with that comparison that's being made.
Well, it's a very different film to Saving Private Ryan. Am I comfortable with being compared to one of the greatest war movies ever made? Yes, I'm very comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm delighted and flattered. But on the other hand, it's not a combat film. You know, the first half an hour of Saving Private Ryan is visceral and shocking and, you know, one of the most extraordinary pieces of filmmaking I've ever seen. And when I first turned up to make American Beauty, it was for DreamWorks. And I turned up in LA to make the movie. And the first thing that happened to me was I got invited to the premiere of a new movie called Saving Private Ryan. I'm like, wow, that looks interesting. It's Spielberg's new film.
Wow.
And after half an hour, my jaw was on the floor.
So
to be compared to that is no bad thing. Yeah. But it's not a combat film, this. There's not a lot of bloodshed. It operates more like a ticking clock thriller than it does a conventional war movie, if such a thing exists.
I think it's probably the intimacy of such a big movie being so intimate and personal at the same time. Some of my best memories of doing interviews and red carpets are here in Chicago with you and Tom Hanks. With Road to Perdition, and I remember the American Beauty journey that we sort of all went on at the same time. What are your Chicago memories of not only the press journey of all of that, but actually filming here? I remember when streets were closed down and all that was going on for Perdition.
Yeah, I mean, I my memories are all, movie memories, really, and I very, very happy time here. You know, I do feel Chicago is a character in Road to Perdition, and I really, fell in love with the city. And not just the city, but all the small towns, many of the small towns in around it, And that sense that there was this mythic landscape that surrounds you here, and this Oz rising up out of that landscape, which is Chicago. And I try to kind of get that into the movie. So I have almost unbroken happy memories, even though it was bloody cold.
And you've come back when it's also bloody cold.
I know, yeah.
We're going to blame you for all of that.
Okay. He is the Directors Guild of America Best Director of the Year for feature films, Sam Mendes. We talked with him about a month ago or so when he was here in Chicago before the movie 1917 has come out. It has pretty consistently been winning awards like crazy, and now winning the Best Director for the Directors Guild of America Awards, one of the most reliable predictors of what might happen at the Oscars, puts this movie in a pretty solid position on Oscar night, which is 2 weeks from tonight. It'll be February the 9th, to be exact. So we'll keep an eye on all of that.